All right, WTCM News Talk 580. It's a 9:29 with Ron Jolly on a Monday, first full week of school. And I thought we'd review school vouchers. Oh, a lot of politicians these days are afraid to say that. It doesn't come up seriously anymore. It seems like it's been defeated in spirit. But it is working in some places, the concept of school vouchers. Let's find out more about what it is, how it would work, and we'll do that with Mr. Joseph Lehman, who is the president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, a free market research and think tank team set up in Midland, Michigan. Good morning, Mr. Joe Lehman.
Good morning, Ron. It's good to be on the program.
Thanks for joining us here. You know, I'm just going on my own impressions, but would you agree with me that it's kind of disappeared from the public issues stage, or some politicians seem to shy away from the term school vouchers?
Well, in Michigan, there, of course, the voucher was defeated at the ballot in 2000, and so it's cooled off in Michigan a little bit, but nationwide, that's not the story at all. There are a half dozen active voucher programs and a half dozen active tuition tax credit programs in the various states, and those are growing.
They all have, they're slightly different, but what is the, what do they have in common? What's the concept of a school voucher program?
The main feature of a voucher or a tuition tax credit is that it allows the parents to choose the school where their child attends without having to buy a house in the right district. And the way that the mechanism that it works, and vouchers and tax credits differ a little here, but essentially the government allows the funding to follow the child to the school of his or her choice. And in the conventional public school system, funding goes to schools, and then the schools draw a box around their buildings, and the kids who live in the box go to the building.
Yep. Some critics will bring up, and would like to know how it would work in theory, or maybe it already is, when you have, I don't know, special needs students or special education needs. What about schools that on a voucher system would, you know, they'd be competing to get the most students? Would that leave some of the special needs kids out of the mix?
Well, not at all. In fact, in a well-designed school choice program, every child who opts for a non-public school saves the school system money, because half of the money in a well-designed program, half of the money would be used by the child at the new school. Half of the money would stay in the school system that could be used to actually increase per pupil funding in the conventional public school. But there are a host of private schools that serve just special needs kids.
Right. So, but under the school voucher, you would have private schools as well as public schools all competing on the same level?
Well, it would be a more level playing field than right now. See, right now you pay, everyone pays for their public school whether their children go there or not. Mm-hmm. If you want to choose a different or a better school, you have to pay twice. And what a school choice program does is it takes some of the unfairness out of having to pay twice. It lowers the cost of choosing that alternative.
All right, so if you said, well, my under a voucher system, my child goes to a public school, because I can't afford private school. Now you might be able to better afford a private school. What would it do to public schools, though? How would it make them better?
Well, the way that the school choice makes schools better can be seen in our little school choice experiment in Michigan with charter schools, Ron. When charter schools came into existence in Michigan in the mid-90s, just one example, we saw this happening in district after district. A charter school would open and say, hey, we're going to have a full-day kindergarten here. Well, what do you know? Some of the other conventional public schools started saying, oh, well, then I guess we'll offer a full-day kindergarten too, because we don't want to lose students. And we have superintendent after superintendent tell our analysts at the Mackinac Center that they may not like the idea of charter schools, but they admit that charter schools have forced conventional public schools to improve their programs.
Do school voucher programs, I see they've been in Milwaukee for a while, in Florida, in Maine, in Cleveland. How are the vouchers programs working in those areas?
Well, those programs, first of all, are giving parents a choice that they didn't have before. It used to be that the price of choosing a school was buying a house in the right district, and a voucher lowers that to basically transportation, if the voucher doesn't cover transportation. And the way that it's working is you just simply have to look at the waiting lists for those programs. There are parents, I don't have the statistics for all of the half dozen programs here, but these voucher programs are characterized by parents on waiting lists begging to get their child out of the school the government has assigned them to and into a school that they choose.
With the voucher program here, one of the other criticisms is if you're going to send your child off to a St. Francis or St. Michael's or to a Catholic or a religious school, you're mixing this taxpayer state money with religious education, and people are opposed on those grounds. I don't even know if it could be or was challenged in court on those grounds, but how do you explain that argument?
Yeah, that's a common question, and it's the same kind of issue that we have, say, with college student aid. It used to be called Pell Grants, and grants to college students who might use those grants at a religious college. That's mm-hmm. Perfectly legal, been going on for a long time. Same with the GI Bill. And that actually is a fair objection. Someone could say, well, I don't want some of my money going to fund a child's education that teaches things that I don't believe in. And that's been found to be constitutional in the Zelman decision in 2002. That was the Cleveland voucher decision in 2002. But this is also one area where the tax credit program has a key advantage over a voucher program. And this is one reason Mackinac Center analysts have always favored tax credits over vouchers. With a tax credit program, you don't send your money to the government and then let the money send checks to other people so they can send their kids to schools you might not like. Mm-hmm. In a tax credit program, you keep some of your own money and use it to send a child, doesn't have to be your child, to a school that you do agree with. And so the money never is in the hands of the government in the first place.
But when we talk about a voucher, I imagine a piece of paper that's like a currency that's good for admission to a school. Wouldn't it go through the parents as opposed to directly from the state of Michigan to the local Catholic school?
Well, it could be done both ways, and in fact, these programs work both ways. But you're right, Ron. It's like it can be a coupon or just a certificate, that's good for, say, $3,000 worth of tuition.
All right. So with voucher programs, proponents are going to say, look, it will improve competition. It will make schools better. It will give more people access to schools of their choice that they don't have access now. Why was it defeated in Michigan in 2000?
Well, the plan in 2000 was a very narrow program. It only was going to affect about 30 districts in the state, and so most voters, of course, lived outside of those 30 districts, and they said, here's a program that is, it might help the kids in 30 districts around the state, but it's not going to help my kid, and it might cost me something. And so the proposal had some problems, but we also have to remember that the main reason that school choice programs face opposition is because of the school employees union. In Michigan, it's the Michigan Education Association. They view the competition from private schools as a threat rather than as a way to improve education for kids.
I can say they probably still have the same need for the same number of teachers, possibly more.
Well, that's right. It certainly stands to reason that with more schools serving different needs, that there would be a greater need for teachers rather than fewer.
Yeah. All right, we have a question. Dr. Joe Lehman is our guest today from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, just reviewing school vouchers and tax credits for public education. Rachel has a question for Mr. Lehman. Hello, Rachel.
Hi, I have a question.
Yep. Yes.
My concern about school vouchers is not... I think they're a great choice. Actually, I homeschool my three children.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess my concern is that we would be spreading the problems with the public schools into the private schools, because now you're going to... I'm worried that the government will now have control over how the private schools are doing things, and even though those children are doing exceptionally well, the government always wants to put its finger in where it can.
Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting, if it was a government voucher being used at a private school, would there be strings attached?
Yeah, that's a very very good objection to think through in a voucher program, and it's another reason our analysts have favored a tax credit program. Yeah. Rachel, what you propose is actually a very real concern about vouchers because, listen, it's reasonable for a taxpayer and an education department to say, look, if we're going to give you the money, we've got to have some accountability for what goes on in the school. And the even though that hasn't been a problem in higher education, it hasn't been very much of a problem in higher education with Pell Grants and things like that, it's more of an issue with K-12, and those schools have to remain vigilant to not have interference from the government setting priorities. But with the tax credit, you simply keep some of your own money, send the child to a school that you approve of. The money never passes through the government, and so the government has a tougher legal time putting strings on the schools. And there is case law in Arizona that says exactly that.
So you say keep your own money. I mean, you would pay lower taxes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Here's how it would work. In Michigan right now, the amount of money that the state sends to a conventional public school is about $7,000 per year per kid,
mm-hmm.
rough numbers. Let's say a well-designed tax credit program would give you a $3,500 tax credit, or in other words, half the amount of what the state is spending.
Mm-hmm.
So you take that $3,500, you just don't send it to the state. You could take it off your income tax bill or your property tax bill, or if you're a company, off your Michigan business tax bill. And you keep the $3,500. The state keeps the other $3,500 to spend on the conventional public schools, and with that $3,500, you pay tuition wherever you like.
All right, so you could go to something with $5,000 tuition a year. You would only have to pay $1,500 out of pocket.
Well, that's exactly right, and our surveys show that the typical private school in Michigan charges about half of what the government is spending in its schools. So in a lot of cases, it would be a wash.
Now, the other thing, I guess now in this program, remember, you could have grandparents now use their money or businesses, if they wanted to, could sponsor kids or things like that with these tax credits.
Well, that's exactly right. And there is, you could have grandparents, aunts, uncles, neighbors, and, you know, the really untapped potential in Michigan is for the corporate scholarship program. There is a program like this in Florida. There is a program like this in Arizona where, say, the Chrysler Corporation, just to take an example, they could decide, you know, hey, we've got a liability here of $100 million. Now, wouldn't we like to take, say, $5 million of that and pay the tuition for underprivileged children in the inner city?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's strong reason to believe that a company would want that for reasons of goodwill and so forth. And then, so instead of sending it to the state, they still support the education of children. It's just at schools that the parents choose.
All right. Now, I had read before, I think in Holland, where they have a system similar to this, but there were some people, there were a lot of immigrants, there were a lot of new Muslim families arriving, and they said, look, you don't offer private schools that offer what we want for our Muslim students. And so there were some new schools open, but then there were concerns that maybe they had some of the more extreme teachings being offered. And I've heard that argument here, too. People say, well, what if there's a private school run by Nazis in this country?
Mm-hmm.
do we want to give parents vouchers or help them, help have the government, in effect, help pay to have their students go to these possibly objectionable schools?
Well, the United States has a long history of religious education of all kinds, and I think sometimes the opponents of the idea of school choice, they want to conjure up hypothetical images of, well, what about Nazi schools or skinhead schools or witches schools or, you know, any kind of crazy school you can think of. And, you know, our response is, you know, I guess that's possible, but let's look at 300 years of universities in this country that have been, until the last 100 years, have been almost all private, and we still got a lot of private colleges and universities in this country. How many Nazi universities are there, or witches' universities? You know, there may have been some, you know, attempt to set up a college like this, but I'm not aware of it. And so the burden of proof really should be on those who paint these specters.
Right.
Okay, where are the Nazi colleges?
Right. That's a good point. Is there any, do you have any, I can't think of the word here, champions in the legislature who want to pursue either this tax credit idea or vouchers in Michigan again?
Well, the, as you indicated, the voucher idea has been a little under the radar in Michigan, not so in other states. Probably in the legislature right now, the action on school choice is a lot more to do with charter schools. And there are some folks who would favor raising the cap on charter schools. Right now, we're legally limited. Charter school operators are limited in the number of schools that they can open and give choices to kids.
Mm-hmm. So not much action on the voucher. What about the tax credit? Someone called and said, great idea. What's wrong with it? Sounds too good to be true.
Well, the... in Michigan, a voucher or a tax credit would require an amendment to the Constitution. So the legislature can't do it alone. That's one reason the legislature hasn't been out on front on this. In Michigan, the people have to vote on the Constitution, and so then that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Article 8, Section 2 of our Constitution prohibits vouchers and tax credits. That was an amendment made in the early 70s, favored by the Michigan Education Association, and it actually has it has kept a lock on vouchers and tax credits. So there's a significant hurdle to overcome, a constitutional hurdle, and that is to remove the prohibition on tax credits from the Constitution. It would require a ballot ballot measure, an expensive campaign.
Yep.
Against which the unions would spend heavily.
So, not likely much action on these ideas, more like you said, on charter schools, increasing the number of charter schools.
Well, that's the immediate solution. But even as early as 2010, we could see a tax credit or a voucher on Michigan's ballot again. Although I think it's more likely to be a tax credit. Vouchers have been defeated more than once in Michigan, and I think Michigan voters understand some of the entanglement issues there.
Okay. We have one more question for
sure.
Joe Lehman from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. It's Greg in Elk Rapids. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning.
I do have a question for you or your guest. Earlier in the program, and I will say I haven't been able to listen to the entire program, he did mention, as far as funding, a level playing field. All right, and what I was wondering is, public institutions are required, I believe, by law to accept any student and provide services specific to that student, disadvantaged, handicapped, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that many of the private institutions are not required to do this. Now, public schools have to take a fairly large chunk of their budget and aim that towards special ed and so forth. If we're, you know, if we're going to be compared apples to apples, you know, the one lady that called mentioned, you know, some of those things. Will the government become involved?
Right. Well, I think we did bring this up early on, but let's just review that those concerns.
Okay.
There, Joe, is if you have a voucher program or if you have a tax credit program, does it put public schools at a disadvantage because they're required to provide more of these services?
Well, only it's important to look at advantage or disadvantage from the perspective of the student, not the schools. An education system should be for the kids, not for the schools and the teachers. And it really is kind of a myth that the public schools have to accept all takers. And we often miss this. If you don't believe that, just try going to a school in a zip code other than the one you live in. Or when the government has assigned children to schools, what it means is that it's a crime to live in one town and send your kid to another public school in another town. where you don't own a home. And there's some variation there if the schools participate in a school of choice law, but let's just let's be fair about this. The public schools don't take all comers. They say if you don't live in the right neighborhood, you're not welcome here. They have the ability to say that. But with special needs kids, this is a very good point, and it's why any school choice program needs to be designed to save the public system money so that the per pupil spending can increase. And no voucher or tuition tax credit that I'm aware of would take away the option of the conventional public school. That would still be there.
All right, so with the voucher program here, you still have the schools would still receive their per pupil funding, correct?
Correct.
For all the students who go there. They might have fewer pupils if you had one of these systems because some families would now, be more likely to or in a better position to choose a different school.
They would at least have that ability, right.
Yeah. So how would that not put the public school at a disadvantage?
Would
they have less money?
Well, but we would not want to pay the public schools to educate children who don't attend there. The
right.
money would follow the kid
right.
to whatever school the kid went to.
All right. So let's say theoretically, say all families choose to get out of their local public school and go to a different public school or private school,
mm-hmm.
and that leaves that public school, say theoretically for this argument to the extreme, with a majority of special needs or special education students, which they still only get $7,000 per head for, but they have what higher costs, I guess, in educating them.
Well, the legislature would be able to increase per pupil funding because of the money a school choice program would save. And
okay.
And so, we just have to, if we look at, say, charter schools, which are still public schools, but if we look at other private school choice programs, vouchers and tuition tax credits in other states, we just haven't seen that happen. So I think any program probably needs to design with that possibility in mind, but I don't think we need to say, oh, that's going to kill the program.
Yeah. So by the way, if to remind people there, under one of these ideas, you would pay $3,500 less in taxes. You would have that tax credit, and you could use that to go to a private school. And if you chose to do that, whether that covered all the expenses or part of the expenses, that would be $3,500 per student less the state would be paying. So they would have extra money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And let's not forget that many parents who choose other schooling options for their kids, and I'm thinking particularly of the homeschool parents, all of them have the ability to send their child to if they have special needs child, they have the ability to send that child to public school. Yet about 20% of those who homeschool say that the reason they homeschool is because their public school was not meeting the needs of their special needs child.
Mm.
Now that isn't to say that the school isn't helping a great many children, but it is to say that a one-size-fits-all program, especially for special needs kids, is just not going to help everyone.
Yeah.
And so even when you have homeschool parents who have to do the burden of that educating themselves, many of them are not taking the free option.
All right. I know you're long and I'm long here. I have to get a break in, but people can always read more about this and many other issues in education and other public issues. You can go to the website there. There are all kinds of reports you can read or download. You get connected to the Mackinac Center's other websites. They have Michigan Votes. Look up how your local people are voting on issues and all kinds of great connections. Mackinac.org is the website. It's Mackinac with a C on the end. Looks like Mackinac.org. Joe Lehman, the president, based in Midland, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Ron. Great to talk to you again.